There was a letter released to the Senate Intelligence Committee the other day. In the confirmation hearing of Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, and of these fine intelligence operatives and analysts and warfighters, there was one that I know well, my brother Nicholas, Nicholas S. Cass, who signed the letter for Tulsi Gabbard. He's our guest on the Chicago Way today, along with Jeff Carlin, as always, co-host here, executive producer at WGN Radio and my friend. And I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you as the masters of war in the Senate scream at Tulsi Gabbard and call her every kind of traitor as she stands up against their impulse to drive us to war in Iran? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
I want to make certain that in no way does Russia get a pass in either your mind or your heart, or in any policy recommendation you would make or not make.
Senator, I'm offended by the question because my sole focus, commitment, and responsibility is about our own nation, our own security, and the interests of the American people. In carrying out the responsibilities of the Director of National Intelligence, if confirmed, no country, group, or individual will get a pass. In my fulfilling that responsibility of providing that full intelligence picture so that you all can make the best informed policy decisions for the safety, security, and freedom of the American people. You have my commitment to be completely objective, unbiased, and apolitical, and I hope you understand my commitment to our country's interest.
I absolutely do. You have answered my question in the manner in which I wanted to hear, that you will do this in an objective manner, provide the information necessary, and that Russia, if it's a threat, you will tell us so and tell us the details of that threat.
Yes, Senator.
And as promised, my brother, Nick. Hey, Nick. Welcome to the Chicago Way again, my friend.
Hey, John. Hey, Jeff. How are you guys?
Good, Nick. Good to have you. This is certainly a week to get you in on the Chicago Way and pick your brain. Thanks for coming in.
Always good to be here. Glad to be back in balmy Romania. I was in Chicago and then Washington for a bit. And during the inauguration, I was doing color commentary for Romanian TV.
Nice.
And it was pretty interesting. And it was so cold. You get that feeling where you think your face is going to fall off in Chicago sometimes. It was like that in D.C. So here it's balmy. I don't know why, you know, but it's really nice. So good to be home. Bucharest.
You would think that it would be rather frigid around where you were because you signed that letter, and that letter makes it clear that people of respect in the intelligence community, unlike the shameless 51 who signed that letter to elect Joe Biden and say that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russia disinformation, and that whole Russia collusion enterprise of the Democrats was paid for by Hillary Clinton and her erstwhile spy out of her committee and campaign committee. She paid for the whole thing, and that was disinformation big time. But it led to very difficult outcomes for the United States. And now, what are we to make of this letter and Tulsi Gabbard and the whole business of, my concern is that President Trump has to fight for her in the Senate because of who they are. And what do you make of it, Nick?
Well, thanks again, guys. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's really a good series of questions, John. I think first thing is to remember that this all comes against the backdrop of in what I would call the postmodern coup of 2016 or 2017, in which the information bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton became the excuse for the deep state operation. In other words, in a lot of cases in the deep state, wherever the deep state is, these things are related. In other words, the bureaucracy might be the one controlling it, and they'll use their political or media friends to drop a story that everyone can then refer to and say, oh, well, we've got this report. We need to look into it. And that becomes the basis for this sham investigation, which was an effort to get the president out of the United States out of office by claiming he was a Russian agent. I mean, ludicrous, but, you know, and so we're hearing that obviously about Tulsi Gabbard. We hear that about anybody who you know, does not share the uniparty view, a uniparty view that's shaped by the bureaucracy, frankly, on a lot of issues, whether it's the Middle East or whether it's Ukraine. And so, you know, people out there are doing their duty by saying to Tulsi Gabbard in the hearing that, you know, her comments seem to reflect the points of the Russians and the Iranians. Again, they haven't let it go. I mean, they're still pursuing that. And the reason why is because they understand this is an existential struggle for the American system. And the question is whether or not you're going to let the deep state win or you're going to push back. Now, I think President Trump is pretty determined on pushing back against the deep state. I mean, we already have Kash Patel. We have, or soon to have Kash Patel. We have Pete Hegseth. We have others. Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is the linchpin of all of this because it involves foreign intelligence gathering and then presumably the ability to articulate threats against the United States. When you articulate threats against the United States, you can scare the hell out of people into doing a lot of different things. And you don't really need to consider too much if what is presented to you is the threat of, oh, let's say in the early 2000s, it was the threat of the mushroom cloud coming from Saddam, right? And so all you have to do, it's very easy to spin people up when you control the echo chamber, the circle around any policymaker, and it creates an opportunity for people to drive a lot of and create a lot of pressure for that. So this is a critical position. I thought she performed admirably. I think there are a lot of people who are going to be exposed if they vote no against her, I think, and people will see and understand what's going on. I think she did herself a great job. Of course, if she makes it, it will all be attributable to the letter I signed. That will be the 100% story. And if she doesn't, it won't. But yeah, I think she was just terrific.
Yeah, but it's a big risk for you. I mean, you're signing, the idea that you're signing on to help a politician is something that I never thought possible, you know, that you would ever do. So what she represents must be important to you. Yes?
Yes. I think she represents probably the last effort we're going to have to reform the intelligence community and the national security bureaucracy. And if we don't do it now, we're doomed. This has gotten way out of hand. One of the big problems, which I've talked about on X, is not only the idea of people investigating and trying to undermine elected civilian leaders by, you know, with these kind of ludicrous claims that become legal actions, but also simply by a form of regulatory capture, what's known in the sort of literature as like regulatory capture, but which I call bureaucratic capture. You have a situation in which the overseers are so thoroughly conditioned by their interaction with the bureaucracy that they unknowingly even just adopt points of view of the bureaucracy and without even having much reflection. I mean, I think you saw on the Senate Select Committee for Intelligence, that there are a lot of people who are pretty smart. There are a lot of people who I think need to really kind of study. And intelligence can actually help people by giving them a full story. And this goes for the State Department and other the ability to bring other expertise into the Hill so that people can hear it. But if all you're getting is the kind of stuff that we've been conditioned to get for the last 9 years, you're going to have a real problem. Or I'd say for the last 30 years during the moment of American ascendancy and unipolar activity, we've been badly served in key respects by our apparatus. And their interest is obviously in trying to maintain their own autonomy and control of the situation for interests that are not necessarily related to the national security, but related to their own bureaucratic entrepreneurialism and interests, power interests. So this is an effort to push back against that. Tulsi Gabbard, a former Democrat, is, I think, the perfect person for this. And it's not because I agree with her on the issues. I mean, there are many issues, perhaps, where I might have a nuanced difference of opinion on certain things, but that's to be expected. What you want is a person who you know will listen and will let people make their case. They have to make a strong case, but they'll let their people make that case. And she's that kind of person. And so that's why I think, regardless of what the particular qualities of any analysis are, the fact is that I really fully expect that she's going to create an environment where people will be able to make analytical points, not policy prescriptive points, but analytical points that are going to be very, very important for the president to understand it here. And it was interesting because a lot of people were asking, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? She's not even the DNI yet. So what they're asking for her is her personal opinion on issues. She can have personal opinions on issues, but that should not and will not be the determining factor. It ought not be. And the determining factor, what the determining factor will be is the intelligence and analysis and the collection and the analysis that comes up through the system. So the good thing is she's a person of character. I don't think she's interested in, offering her particular views on issue X, Y, and Z. We've had too much of that for the last, 20 years or so, and it's time to end that. So that's why it's such an important thing that she be confirmed.
It's interesting. The irony in all of this is the left is very much about, a diversity and all that, but except for when it comes like diversity of thought, right? They want, drones that just toe the line and read the press release and then that's it. You're right. I mean, that's what you want. You want someone who's going to be able to tell the president, I know you want to say this out loud. I know you want to, this is what you want to put up front as like the public facing, but here's the facts that we now know. And this is, here's my thought on her. Here's what people are saying, because that's the point of the DNI, right, John? I mean, or Nick, I mean, they're afraid of this pick, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's either going to be an acting person who Trump's, or it's going to be, somebody, eventually it's going to be Trump's pick. So he's going to have the keys to the castle. I mean, I don't understand the motivation in standing in front of the first choice, because if Trump has to fall back to a second choice because Tulsi Gabbard doesn't make it through confirmation, well, he's probably going to be, pissed about it. And then that person's going to be kind of indebted. I mean, it just makes you moving away from what he wants. It's just going to aggravate him. So I don't understand what the play is really. Is it the fear that someone who is in the position of the DNI access to all the secrets, and if Trump picks the wrong person, they're going to tell Trump all the secrets that the intel community doesn't want? So wouldn't he have access to that anyway? I mean, I don't understand why they stand in front of Tulsi's appointment, unless it's just political. And if it's just political, then like you said, it should be completely, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Well, I hope you don't mind if I jump in here, because I want to quote myself. This is perhaps a distasteful thing I'm doing, but I have to. And on Sunday, I wrote a piece called Tulsi Gabbard versus the Masters of War. And what this is about to me is keeping the echo chamber the way they want it, so they can drive war with Iran, and that's all he can hear, because they're going to control what he hears. If you control the DNI, if you control the CIA and the DNI, you're controlling what the president hears. And how he bases his decision is on what he hears and is told. Yes, Nick? I mean, you've been there. You've briefed these people. You know,
yeah, one of the great ironies of the situation is that you hear people talking about, oh, Trump is going to politicize these bureaucracies. He's actually going to politicize them. Okay. And this is how. When you have a deep state, generally the deep state mentality becomes so aggrandized that they look down with disdain at the grubby politics of partisan politics of parties and this sort of thing. They see themselves as above that. But at the same time, they are as actively political, even more so than anybody else. And I've written about this in the context both of the United States and in Turkey, and from which the deep state concept comes. The stake there was every bit even more political than the actual political parties. So that's a feature of the deep state, because what happens is the deep state tries to protect its own interests, just like a political party, and will use all the power it has to do that. So that has to be stopped. That kind of politicization has to be stopped by having people of character ride herd over the organs that, if they behave in with impunity and with in ways that they consider, where people don't have recourse to accountability, then you're going to have some problems. So what you want is to just root that out. You have to root out that mentality. I remember having a conversation once long ago with a politician in a faraway country who was very supportive of the deep state of that country. And he said, well, all these people might think this, but policy is still made in bureaucracy X, Y, or Z, right? They still thought of themselves as the masters of the situation. That bureaucratic mastery over a civilian ability to conceive and perceive realities that we need to understand has to end. If they're shaping it all the time exclusively through their own prism, and it's a prism of where bureaucratic interest is paramount, then we're doomed. And we've had a lot of that. I mean, think about what happened in Iraq. Think about what's happened in the Middle East. Think about Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is a disaster. And it's partly because of that unwillingness to contemplate some of these challenges and realities. That's clearly the case. And you see all these people reflecting the bureaucratic interests of various bureaucracies, sounding off here, there, and everywhere else. The important thing, again, for a person like Tulsi Gabbard is to end that, basically clean out the Augean stables, your Augean stables. I don't even know how to say it, but to also make sure that good arguments, reasonable arguments based on sound information are aired within the deliberative process. And that's the job, and that's what she has to do. So what she thinks about personally about Iran or Syria or this or that is less important than that function.
Well, one thing I noticed in her discussion or her testimony is that the senators, you can almost see them either reflecting Hillary Clinton talking points by calling her a traitor, or hoping to change her mind or something like that. It was like watching rhesus monkeys. I respect the Senate, but some of these people are just so craven in political terms. It was like watching rhesus monkeys get food pellets in a machine if they did a certain task. Because I watched the Colorado Senator Michael Bennett eat his food pellets along with the Senator Kelly from Arizona. And she dropped a Democrat bomb on them because she brought up the Operation Tiger Sycamore, which is a declassified, Nick, CIA and intelligence operation that, according to Ms. Gabbard, and things that I've read about it in the declassified sense, was about sending arms to Syrian insurgents. Some of them were related to Al-Qaeda. And she was furious about President Obama helping Al-Qaeda. What do you have to say about that, Nick?
On that in particular, the only thing I could really say is that that was a very powerful statement about what happens when the United States government pursues policies in areas about which it really has no clue about how to operate. I mean, there are people who will, of course, know and have certain expertise, but these kinds of approaches, and it's not just limited to the things she was talking about, but it could be just a regular diplomatic approach. These things require some real understanding of what you want and what the environment is and what you expect to come after it. So I thought that that was a very powerful thing, and we'll have to see where that goes. Now, if I'm a deep stater, I'm already trying to say, to use her comments to promote the idea of war in Syria. So I could say, yes, I agree with what you said about Syria and how much we hate Al-Qaeda. These people are horrible, and so therefore we must get back into the business of war in Syria, which would be exactly the point that I think she was trying to make as a thing to avoid, right? So
yes.
So you can see how these things, it's like mercury, you know, the people will go around it. So for example, in Syria, if you're thinking about it as a policy matter, yes, these kind of, the support for the quote unquote moderate rebels and all that kind of thing helped create the situation that we later were so horrified by. But the answer cannot be to support Marxist rebels as a means to undercut the influence of the kinds of rebels that we may have supported in the past, right? So again, what we're confronting in a variety of these situations is a continued, really a lack of ability on the part of the United States apparatus to operate with the kind of sophistication that would really be required in an area like that, that is extremely messy and where nobody is really a hero and all this kind of thing. I thought it was interesting today that, or I saw an interview with Megyn Kelly and Marco Rubio where he talked about this. And I think that it was really interesting. And the point was, okay, this is the situation we're in now. These guys are in charge now in Syria. What do we do about it? And there, I've talked to a lot of people from the region, and they are trying their best and hoping, and there's always hope involved in these sorts of things, to help encourage a continuation of what we've seen so far, which is more or less a strikingly different than it was in 2014 when ISIS broke out, right? So we have to accept that while some of these people are not our cup of tea, we have to look at what's actually happening on the ground now as we make policy and not be stampeded by fear into another kind of disaster that we committed years ago. And I think that's going to be the key. So, okay, yes, this was the analysis. This is what the problem was. We missed this. What do we do now? And there's going to be a lot of policy fights, not analysis fights, but there should be policy fights over that. There should not be, an analysis should not be crafted to promote a particular policy outcome. That's called politicization. And we've had enough of that in the 21st century.
Yes, we have.
Jeff? I'll say Nick, what do you make of this new annual media rotation program that they've announced at the Pentagon, which essentially is pulling NBC, New York Times, NPR, and Politico away from working desk broadcast locations within the Pentagon and bringing in more friendly news outlets, if you want to call them that, media outlets, like, where we got here, OAN, you've got some of the, the HuffPost, which is my favorite because the HuffPost is like, wait, what? Why us? We don't even have a Pentagon. But it sounds like it's a program that's designed to shake things up at the very least over there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is. It's designed to award appropriately the mainstream media for its malfeasance. And, right. You know, the question is whether or not these new organizations will actually, you know, do fair reporting. I suspect that in some instances they will. There will be always the danger of biased political reporting from any of these places. We've seen that in spades in the so-called mainstream media, which is why the mainstream media has been so discredited. Yeah, I think for a period ahead, we're going to be in a really, really interesting moment, because I think that we're going to see, I think, media getting more access to the kinds of things that they want to in order to investigate some of the things that have happened previously. So we're going to see media doing that. I imagine that the oversight committees run by Republicans who are, not toadies, will also be getting the kind of information that they request on a variety of different things that happened in the past, in order for them to understand and where to go ahead in the future. So I think at the moment, right now, this is really a good thing to do. But it'll also have, we have to always guard against the return to the kind of status quo ante in terms of the relationship between the media and the president and everything else. I mean, one of the things I've written about before was this idea that if you're not watching a deep state or a bureaucracy, it can inevitably fall back into the kinds of activities for which deep states have become famous. Once the civilians start to invite the vampire back into the house, so to speak, they're going to be able to wreak havoc potentially. So the important thing is that under the new circumstance, we're starting out with a great deal of skepticism aimed toward the federal bureaucracies. And that skepticism, I think, has to continue. It'll have to continue in order to make sure that reform occurs. And it's never really over. You don't get a point. There's no point where you get to say, okay, I don't need to be skeptical anymore. I can now embrace these guys and love them because they've got the message and everything's good. No, always got to be skeptical, though. The whole notion of the way in which we operate here is to have separation of powers and for people to live up to their responsibilities, not to knuckle under to political pressure or not to become co-opted by the bureaucracies that are supposed to be emanations of the executive, and not for the bureaucracies to basically try to trap the executive into bad situations. So that's going to require constant vigilance.
I mean, imagine the situation if the Clinton dossier had come out and it wasn't, the CDC starts being whispered around in the Pentagon, and all of a sudden it becomes out in there and everyone's talking about it and it comes from an NBC or an ABC or all these mainstream. But you have someone who's New York Post or Breitbart who's going to be in there. They probably would be like, what the hell? Like, this is one, the president is, we're not even on that side, but it changes the whole dichotomy of what information is going to come out of the Pentagon. And that's the, like, as you're talking about it, we're working the gates and hopefully, and I like the idea of a rotation. I mean, because what's the benefit? People are like, oh, well, but so-and-so, Jennifer Griffin or whatever, has this connections with assets within the Pentagon, but they're really developing about being there. And then why is that good for us? Right? Like, that's not good for us because you said it just, that's how you establish a foundation for a deep state to run our lives, and we lose our voice, and that's the whole point. It's interesting, and at the very least, I'm glad we're rotating because that's the way you do it. New York Post was the other one that's moving in there as well.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I mean, you like the shakeup, but Nick, I mean, my point, I would kind of get back to the idea that at the end of the day, the president is the president, and the president gets to pick the cabinet, and so the obstructionist in Tulsi Gabbard is just being an obstructionist just to say, hey, like John's been saying, I'm taking the pellet, But, at the end of the day, it's still going to be his cabinet. So he's still got to have somebody. I mean, the deep state's going to somehow slide in the can, someone into Trump's inner circle and force him somebody. He's not going to fall for that. He fell for that last time. He had all these supposed bright minds and people that he thought would be, like you were saying, would put the country over their politics. And then he was, proven wrong that he shouldn't have listened to them. So now he's going his own route. And these people are all in line. I just don't understand their end game because they're not going to get there. And it's just going to make the system. Is it just to be in the way that just to keep this thing from happening?
I think that we're in a right now, from the perspective of the deep state, they're looking for scalps. They're looking for a way to be able to say that they've or to send the signal throughout Washington that they still have power that can't be ignored. That they'll have people who are, eating the pellets without fully comprehending what they're doing. That'll be even better. And yes, President Trump presumably will try to put somebody else back up there. And that person will, potentially face the same thing unless they are much more suitable to the interests of the deep state. That's the bet that they're making, that the next person, if offered, will not be Tulsi Gabbard 2.0, but will be, you know, somebody much more, you know, quote unquote, respectable, another adult in the room. It is a challenge for them. I mean, they are, you know, the deep state has some real problems now. They're facing a president that's really determined to do this. There's going to be other ways to make them to go get back at them. We're seeing that some of the president's actions in the FBI and elsewhere are redressing the some of the wrongs committed in the previous eight or so years. So it's not that the president doesn't have an ability to rectify the situation, but you know, this is part of the game. They will want a scalp. They will want to basically make it more difficult for him, a higher to do this. And it's not a strategy right now of victory, but it's a strategy of delay.
Right. Run out the clock. Because, I mean, everyone talks about the president's most powers and the most, you know, cachet he has politically is when he wins.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think there's a lot of interest on the part of delay. People want to delay a whole host of things that the president is probably trying to change, including maybe consideration of how to end the Ukraine war, et cetera. The more delay there is, the better the chance that inertia will set in. Mm-hmm. Everybody understands that in any administration, the first 100 days are critical. If you can get past that, who knows, right? And then you can assess what you're doing and how it's done and all of that from the interest of from the side of the bureaucracy, which again is trying to promote and salvage as much as it can of its own power interests as opposed to serving the interests of the executive. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I think that this is a very, very important symbolic thing. She is well known for her position where she would take issue even with her own party, the Republicans or the Democrats, and even with the president in previous years, current president. So I think she has a good reputation for thinking outside the box, and that's what we need. We do not need someone to fall in line and get with the program and do all that. We need someone who will, the only program that she needs to get to is ensuring that we have as objective, clear, ground truth-based analysis and other intelligence that as we can get. And that applies also for our diplomats and for all the other people who are making policy at the White House. And I would also hope that the committees, the Senate and House committees that do oversight on any parts of the bureaucracy will also want to understand what went wrong over the last 8 years so they can figure out how not to repeat those mistakes and start from there.
She definitely threw down the gauntlet.
Yeah.
And as someone who supported the Iraq war at the beginning.
Yeah.
I've come to regret it. I think of all those men that soldiers died and were wounded. And I find that I bear shame and guilt. I can't get over it. But the one way to deal with it is to have clear intelligence that doesn't have Cheney and Halliburton talking about aluminum tubes that are going to shoot nuclear weapons at us, right? Which is what he did. I'll never forgive him.
Yeah, I think that, you know, back in those days, people were suffering under the shock of the war, of the attack on 9/11, the horrific, you know, knocking down of the towers and all those poor people got killed. And it was easy, I think, under those circumstances, easier to promote the kind of policies that we did, given the willingness of people to the desire of people to pay back the evildoers. I think that was a fair enough point. But the question,
that was a golden era for the deep state, right?
It was the era where they really, the unaccountable deep state, administrative state, however you want to call it, that has been around for a long time, but it's kind of metastasized in those days into something that was just all powerful. And I think that's a real an issue. But I think that it's understandable, John. I mean, it was understandable then under the circumstances. I think it's less, understandable that people would go along with this. I mean, I think even, Tulsi Gabbard joined the military because she wanted to fight against the people who broke the towers down, right? So I think there was a moment for a lot of people who were, you know, just like, hey, how does this make sense? What are we doing? Why are we doing this? What's the connection? And of course, when the revelation of the false pretenses and stuff became clear, that people were, I think, were very much surprised, but starting to question. But I think, you know, it's really interesting, and we've talked about this before, but I think the big moment was actually Donald Trump in 2015 taking on Jeb Bush. You wrote about this, I think, very eloquently.
Yes, he did.
Right, because what that meant was that the Republican Party, the party of the Bushes, was being assaulted by someone who didn't want to go along with it, because their interest was just to say, oh, nothing to see here. We got to get past this. We've addressed this. And they didn't want to talk about it. They wanted to keep everything going so that the Bushes can continue to rule the party and that the party would continue to be the kind of, win or lose, the kind of the other side of the uniparty, right? And Trump, to his everlasting credit, changed that. And I think that was, you know, that was 10 years ago now. And so I think that was the big moment, the revelatory moment, much more important than even the earlier statements and admissions that were made in bureaucratic settings or in the media, et cetera, because this was a frontal assault on the power, the visible power structure, the part that he could get at as a candidate. And the real power, the bureaucratic power, did not particularly appreciate that. And so that's why you started to see a combination of, you know, a joint political bureaucratic partnership to try to stage a coup against him. Beginning then, even before he got in office, after he left office, he was, again, being subjected to the mop-up phase, right, where they were going to put him in jail and bankrupt him. And so deny him an opportunity to run again. And, all of that, none of that was lost on anybody. And so we see now that he won, and now he has this mandate to win and to pursue this. I hope that if things don't go well for Tulsi Gabbard, that indeed this does fire up the determination to continue to do this, because there's an awful lot at stake here. Having intelligence that, or any information that allows you to say, hey, wait a minute, is really in order at a time when so many people are interested in stampeding us to war for reasons that are not in the vital national security interest of this country. So we'll have to see, but I'm kind of hopeful. And I think that one of the big indicators that I've seen so far is that John Cornyn is going to support. So we'll have to see what this means ultimately when this plays out in the Senate, but I'm hoping it's obviously going to work out well.
It's interesting kind of close this loop on 9/11 and this kind of that transition and the Bush power. You know, the DNI position was created post 9/11, right? So it raises the question, you know, was it just a move by the deep state to solidify the power into one person? Or is it Charles Lipson raised the question the other day, do we need DNI? Is it a position that should even exist? I would say yes, because I look at 9/11, obviously there was some problems there. What's your take on that, Nick?
I think there has to be a comprehensive reform throughout the intelligence and national security bureaucracy. So whatever that reform takes, I think there has to be major structural reform as well. The idea of saying, you know, making a change in the DNI without making changes elsewhere, I think would be a big mistake. So I'm hoping that we're going to see, you know, big changes everywhere. I mean, what did Kash Patel say before the long ago? He said, if I become FBI director, I'm going to make, headquarters building a museum to the deep state. You know,
love it.
We'll have to see what that ultimately plays out in practice. But, you know, you have to actually remove the people who were playing politics. You have to punish those who did that and who subverted the system. You know, we've seen some effort to get at that by the revocation of the security clearances for the 51 guys who wrote that letter where they basically said Trump, or that the Hunter Biden laptop was a Russian disinformation op, against the backdrop of 5 years of accusations of the president of the United States. So the idea, the stated implication was that, okay, here we go again. The Russians are going to try to support their spy, Donald Trump, and get him back into office in 2020. I mean, that's the against the backdrop of it. It was even worse. It was crafted specifically for that, I think. And, you know, so whether it's changes to the DNI, whether it's changes to other bureaucracies, there has to be changes to those bureaucracies that are meaningful and that I think make it difficult for people to use their bureaucracies to play the kind of political games that we saw so many of those guys play not only with that letter, the 51 who signed the letter of the Hunter Biden laptop letter, but the things that they would do when they would go on TV, the things that they would say, the way that they tried to impute inside knowledge and argued from authority because they were supposed to be masters of intelligence. I mean, some of these guys were truly idiots, by the way. I will tell you that openly, that there are some people there about who I was very, very disappointed that they would sign that. It would kind of hurt me personally. I just thought it was horrible that they would go along with that. But there were a bunch of other guys who are complete idiots who don't know the first thing about how to think outside, think through a problem. They can't even think their way out of a paper bag. And here they were being lionized by what I call the deep state media for their supposed, for their acumen. And that was imputing to that letter a gravity and an authority that it didn't have. It was a complete fallacy. You know, you're never supposed to argue from authority, right? I mean, just because I look at me, I have this, so therefore listen to me. No, you have to make a case. You have to make an argument. You have to back it up with facts. And so I'm hoping that in light of all that's happened, and with Tulsi Gabbard at the helm, we're going to start to see some real changes in that respect. And I think we will.
I'm just going to offer one thing. Thank you, Nick. The device you're looking for is called a marat. It was a French word referring to the stick or scepter with a carved head on it, originally or traditionally carried by a jester. And I wonder if we need some marats of John Brennan and others in the deep state, like Clapper and people that signed the 51 letter, so that we can make mock of them, because we can't rely on the corporate news media to point things out that must be pointed out. So there has to be sort of a vulgar humor aspect to it. No?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You've written about this in other contexts, but you know, the statues that they used to put up at the ancient Olympia, which were dedicated by the fines people paid for cheating, right? So if you were a cheater, you had to pay a fine and you were discredited. And when people would go into the sanctuary, you would see these statues, which, forever, reminded people of your cheating or whatever. If I could buy the Chicago Tribune building and put a newspaper back in there, I think we could imagine that in addition to the Nathan Hale statue that we've talked about that bears resemblance to another Nathan Hale statue, that you could put statues up of all of those people with, you know, maybe their hands caught in a cookie jar or surprised that they were being caught in flagrante delicto or whatever the heck it would be, which would make precisely that point. And I would start with those guys, but I would also include, you know, the mainstream media and everybody else, all these people who are, who have completely discredited themselves. And maybe 1,000 years from now, America of that day or a new civilization would be able to unearth all those and say, wow, this is what happened. And, this was an appropriate punishment for them, their reputations being regarded properly, which means that they would have been humiliated beyond belief. So maybe that'll happen. We'll see.
Nick, you never cease to amaze me, or whatever the cliche that I have to use here. You constantly.
What did people say?
Refresh.
What did our brother Peter always say?
You'd
always say, you cease to amaze me. when he got the prosecutor, when he would get tired of it.
Norm Crosby.
Not him. I mean, but actually he was correct. So, but yeah, thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Nick, before we let you go, I got to ask you, you know, you're a guy who's been in DC and clearly is knows the intel, who to ask for the right information. What are you, if I'm in DC and I need a good plate of food, where are you sending me?
You know, I would send you to, I just went to Ocean Prime during inauguration week. I really like that. It's a good place. Good seafood and good steaks. They do a really good job. There are other steakhouses like BLT and that kind of thing. There was a really good Greek restaurant, you know, called Balos, really liked. And
what is it called? Say again.
Balos. And what
Balos.
And what I liked about it is that, you know, Washington is renowned for having mediocre food from around the world, right? So we're starting to see, you know, some really good places pop up. And one of the great consequences also of our American style of imperialism is that our Afghan food in Washington is really, really good. So we got that.
I can confirm. I have only been to DC once and I had very good Afghan food.
Yeah. Lebanese Taverna is good too. I mean, it's a couple of good places. You know?
What about Ben's Chili Bowl?
Never
For God's sake, it's a, I'm literally small D Democrat, you know? I mean, the food of the people is chili and a hot dog, for God's sake. Come on.
You know, nope. I would have thought that there would have been people back in the day who would, back when Obama came in, who would have tried to turn Washington into a hot dog city. And, you know, nobody really did. And I was actually talking to a restaurateur who's like, he had a number of pizzerias in Chicago, really good ones. And I said, well, why don't you come out to Washington and you know, do that? It's like Obama's president now. A lot of people think Chicago, blah, blah, blah. He said, you really can't do it. I go, why? He goes, because in order to make it profitable, you need to have a number of places to justify bringing all the same ingredients from wherever you have it to Washington. So you have to bring the sausage. You have to bring the bread. You have to bring everything you have, the water even, you know, because the water will change the quality of everything. So he said it was, you know, to open up one place would have been, would not have been a good idea. But yeah, we missed an opportunity there, you know. Instead, you got Five Guys now in Chicago, which is good.
For Nick Cass, Nicholas S. Cass, my brother, 30 years serving the government at the Department of State.
Serving the United States, John. Serving the United States of America.
I stand corrected. Serving the United States of America, the Department of State, Central Intelligence, Director of, I mean, the National Intelligence, and on, and postings all over the world, and deals and details that I won't get into and I don't know. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio, and my friend, future physics teacher, and someday we're going to have a talk about physics. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of your favorite website, John Cass News, we need you to subscribe. I can't work for free. This podcast is free, but I mean, I have a living to make. I have bills to pay. And we're trying to give you what we can to enlighten you and produce what I think is the most important thing of all. Common sense, a spark of common sense, and the road to light. Thanks for joining us once again on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.